Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 20th day of November, Anno Domini 2021, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 8 minutes after the hour, we are going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the news.
And I want to say happy birthday to my mom today.
Happy birthday, Mom. How exciting.
She's 30 years older than I am.
Well, that's the way that's supposed to work. We were
joking with Jackie at the office that you know, our parents used to seem old, right?
Yeah.
But now that we're our parents' age and older, this isn't old.
Yeah. Today is also the birthday of the President of the United States.
Oh, really?
And Richard Dawson. All right, Linkletter? No, Jack Linkletter.
Let me give you a kiss.
Yeah.
He eventually got in trouble for that, didn't he?
He eventually did, yes. The big one, of course, it is also the birthday of Edwin Hubble, for whom the Hubble Telescope is named. Also, Derrick's birthday.
Well,
she's no longer 10. Yeah. She's 65.
The Hubble constant, Hubble proved that the universe is expanding.
Yeah.
And that was less than 100 years ago?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We just figured that out? The universe is expanding. So now the question is, will it expand forever or will it contract again?
Right.
And there's a fight in the dark energy crowd on whether there's enough dark energy to keep it expanding.
I think a lot of us won't be around to find that out.
In Unix and in Linux,
yeah,
you can have a dot plan where you put information, and people could then go back in the day when everybody was, you know, you could go look that up. My plan was to watch the heat death of the universe from a comfy chair.
Yep. Well, right now, all computers are going to die in 2038 because that's the end of the Unix time.
That's right. All right, to the news. Apple will finally allow people to repair their Apple devices, starting with the latest iPhone models and possibly their M1-powered Macs as well. Next year, the company will start selling replacement parts and even tools needed to replace and install some broken components. This is quite the reversal from the prevailing attitude of making tech so hard or expensive to fix that it's easier to replace than to repair. It's likely this change came about because Apple saw an opening in a relatively small but likely still lucrative market where, I almost wrote ludicrous, where it can cut out the middleman for device repairs. All those third-party repair shops and kiosks and shopping malls could be just standing between Apple users and its new repair store. Why would Apple give up any of the money its customers would pay to an independent shop for repairing a cracked screen or broken earpiece when it could sell users everything they'd need to fix it? This move also has some serious implications for companies like iFixit, which not only provides great overviews of device repairability, but also sells parts and tools. Again, it looks like Apple has decided it can make some money doing that itself with no need for an intermediary. But none of this is to denigrate or criticize the move. It's actually pretty great if you don't mind fixing your own devices and wish they were less disposable. But right to repair advocates are still wary of the severely limited list and Apple's long-term intentions. We have the sneaking suspicion I'm speaking for you guys here, that this is going to affect very few people to begin with, because the overwhelming majority of Apple users probably aren't keen on wrestling with the industrial adhesives used in assembling their iPhones. But it is a stepping stone to changing our relationship to disposable tech. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Apple realizes there might be money in right to repair. Your choices are, I'm already repairing my own iPhone. I might look into it. I would not know where to begin. iPhones can be repaired. And other. So far, we have about 22 votes. None of you are already repairing your own iPhones. That's a surprise to me.
That'll admit it?
Yeah. Well, it's no longer illegal, apparently. Or at least it won't be in January. And of course, if you said other, or if you have more to say about this, because I know you people, head on over to our website, soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you. Scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff. The second you'll see the forums there. Click on that. The second forum down is the poll discussion. Currently, at least, the number one item under poll discussion is 20 November 21. Apple realizes there might be money in right to repair. So far, we only have one other person, MyCQ, said the right to repair gives you the right to FUBAR. More
yes.
money for Apple.
Yeah. That's my biggest concern, because Apple used to do
hold
this.
Hold on.
Yeah, go ahead.
You can also give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
Yeah, Apple used to do this back in the iMac G5 days, the white flat panel iMac. The back came off, and you could get to everything really easy. We love those repair models. But they tried to let end users do the repairs. And we got so many computers in that had been destroyed because people yanked on cables rather than unscrewing them, that now suddenly is a terribly expensive repair. Well, what do you mean it's $1,000? Well, because you ripped the cable off these two parts, now we have to replace the logic board and the video card.
Right.
So I don't see very many people doing it, and I'm afraid for the people that try. The repair shops already are doing it. Apple has had the independent repair shop program for a while. But the other thing is the tools. There's some very expensive and sophisticated tools to repair, to open an iPhone.
Every time Apple comes out with a new model, they use a different screwdriver.
Well, they've been using the Pentalobe screws for a while. But what they're doing is to make it more water resistant, they are literally gluing the phone closed. So you need to buy a special heater to heat the glue without destroying the phone. So you can cut the glue out of the phone. And then you got to glue it back together again when you're done.
So does it break down that it allows you to pry it open easily? Like,
yeah, it softens the glue so that you can pry it open.
That makes sense.
Yeah, and then that makes it water resistant. So if people are going to do their own, they're going to get that glue back in properly.
Yeah,
and then ruin the phone because it got wet because you opened it up. So I'm waiting to see the fine print on this user repair program, because they haven't released specifics yet.
Yeah, because all they got to do is just, you know, if that glue isn't like a gasket that you could slip on there,
a little gasket, yeah,
and slide it on. Otherwise, if you're putting it on through a tube and trying to go around the whole thing and have a slight air bubble in it or anything else, all of a sudden now it's not a tight seal.
Yep.
Right.
And boom, they could turn around and say, oh, sorry, no, the water got in there.
There were early problems of people holding their phones while they were working out and sweat getting in the charging port.
Yep.
Yep.
And ruining the phone. And that's with the seals they already had on it. So that's one of the rumors that we kind of see a phone coming with no ports at all. It was a big deal when they took the headphone jack off.
Right.
We can see they're removing the charging port too, because they're all wireless charging now.
Yeah.
Remove the charging port so there's fewer ingress into the phone. So now we got the speaker jacks.
Right.
So the speakers are actually glued up against the internal case, so that if water gets in the speaker holes, because you got to have holes for the speakers to come out,
right,
that it can't get into the rest of the phone very easily.
Well, that's where it's an issue, and I don't mean this in any form, you know, but women quite often will take their phone and, you know, if they've got, like, say, a V-neck shirt, slide it in between their bra.
Boob sweat.
Yeah, and the sweat from your body if you're a heavy sweater.
Don't put your money there either.
Yeah, and please don't. Please.
And the water gets in there, and I know somebody that has shorted it out.
And that actually goes back to the fact that women's clothes don't have any pockets.
My wife and my daughter are about to go out on a quest.
Yes.
Horses, lances, swords.
There's a big, big right to add pockets to women's clothes movement going. Please.
Yep.
Well, that's because women used to have dressers. And
right.
They used to have servants that carried all their stuff around.
Exactly.
And the poor people didn't go anywhere, so they didn't need pockets.
Right. By the way, there is a company called Framework at frame.work that makes a fully modular laptop.
Mm-hmm.
You can replace every single component. It only uses Phillips head screws, and everything is replaceable and therefore upgradable. So you could keep this laptop
until they change the sockets.
Then you slide out the socket because the sockets are on
a module.
On a module.
Yeah.
So you slide that out. You want a USB 3, slide out the USB A and throw in a USB C.
Now the M.2s are getting replaced by M.3s.
Right. Slide it out, nice. Slide one back in. Does everything. Frame.work is the name of the company. Now, they're not cheap.
Yeah.
Which is the other side of that coin.
Well, that's the thing. And this is one thing I've told a couple other folks that wanted to all of a sudden, take their laptops apart to try to change the battery. Well, it doesn't look that good. Mm-hmm. I said, all right, tell you what. And this goes for anybody else that's thinking of getting in there and taking it apart. You're going to see that there are hundreds of little screws in there.
Yes.
What I would recommend is if you can, take a piece of white paper and section it all off with little...
I would go to the craft store, get a little craft box.
That's for even good.
Or, yeah.
Well, what a lot of folks will do is they'll put tape, and put pieces of tape across and create sections. So as you take it out, right on that little square where the screws are coming from, put it in that section. And then do that through the whole thing. But, yeah, craft things are great, too.
Bottle caps, the big yep. bottle caps, just tape those down to your piece of paper and put the screws in there so you can't lose
them. I had a dish, and I wound up sectioning it off into 8 sections.
Yep.
And it was magnetic.
There you go.
So it was great. I literally could drop them in there and label them 1, 2, 3, 4. And
right. You'll often find out that the problem isn't taking it apart. It's putting it's putting it back together.
And then having extra screws left over.
Where'd that screw go?
Oh, yeah. That should have been down on the bottom layer after these other 3 pieces went in.
Right.
One of the interesting things that's happened is the company iFixit, who's been really big on pushing the right to repair, they sell parts and tools.
Right.
So if Apple starts selling, and the way you mentioned, if Apple, so they have a vested interest in right to repair because that's what they do.
Right.
But if Apple starts selling the parts and tools themselves, maybe that'll hurt their business.
Right. They'll still be able to do it for non-Apple devices.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and the one thing that we have read already is it's only going to be for out-of-warranty devices.
Right.
And currently the plan is for iPhone 12 and 13 devices. So there aren't that many out-of-warranty iPhone 12 or 13s that they have to worry about yet.
Right.
Yeah, because I would, myself, I'd be very leery if I don't have the experience in trying to take something like that apart because by you opening that up, you are then saying, yes, I feel confident enough that I can do it and I'm proficient at it.
Yeah, if you change the spark plugs in your car, then you can probably do the battery in your phone.
But if you mess it up, you can't go back to them and say, oh, well, it's out of, No, you took it upon yourself. You did it.
Right.
You messed it up.
Well,
you
back,
own it.
Right. But back in the day, replacing the battery in a phone was easy. You pop the back off, which comes right off.
Mm-hmm.
The battery just sits there. So you just pull out the old battery, put in the new battery, pop the back on, and you're done.
Yep. But now people want longer battery life, and they want water resistant.
Right.
So now it has to be a sealed box.
You can't have both. Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right. My wife is trying to, because there are no pockets.
Yep.
My wife is trying to figure out how to get a strap on her phone.
Bandolier is a company that makes iPhone cases with straps. We carry them in our store.
Right. And so she's looking into doing that, and she said, if I can get the back of it, I said, no, you do not want to open this phone.
Mm-mm.
But what you can do is the case you bought is a two-part case.
Yep.
So she's now talking about sliding a ribbon in between those two parts, snapping that back together, putting little ringlets on the end of the ribbon, and then she could put a chain on if she wants, or take it off if she wants.
I'm surprised she hasn't asked you to 3D print a case with hooks
next.
On it for it.
That's next.
Yeah, with
I've offered.
Yeah, with like a little raged hinge type of thing that you can slip the ribbon through or whatever.
Yep. And don't forget, folks, give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free at 1-800-790-0415. Yeah, I really have been looking at that framework laptop because theoretically, it's obsolete proof. Obviously, assuming you can afford the new pieces.
As long as the company sticks around.
And as long as the company sticks around. But that also opens up a great third-party business.
Yeah.
Right? Somebody else making parts for that device if it gets to be popular enough.
The usual analogy is cars, is that you can buy third-party car parts for a lot of cars. You can buy third-party car parts for 40- and 50-year-old cars. But it's only the cars that have become, you know, classic and collectible. You know, try to find a power steering pump for a 1974 Yugo.
Yeah.
That'll be tough.
Well,
you go to the junkyard and find a 1974 Yugo and hope it works.
Exactly. All right, to the phones. Our first caller is William, all the way from Hampton, Virginia. How are things down in Hampton, William?
Wonderful, guys. Dave, Steve, Nick.
Good. So what's up?
Well, this is a lively discussion you guys are having today. And as we speak, I'm literally looking at the spec sheet for my Toshiba, out-of-warranty Toshiba laptop, and it literally says in the memory portion, 4 gigabytes DDR3L 1600 megahertz, not user upgradable, end quote, which in fact is not accurate because I fully intend to add memory to my laptop.
Well, there's two possibilities it could be. For not user upgradable, because some of the early Macs, early 2000 Macs, were not user upgradable, but they could be taken apart and upgraded by a service center that knew how.
Right. Generally, user upgradable means there's a little door in the back.
Yeah.
You pop it open, pull out the old RAM, put in the new RAM.
The other thing that's getting to be more common is the RAM is actually soldered to the main logic board, because that makes it easier and cheaper to manufacture. And in that case, there is absolutely no way for you to unsolder all those chips and resolder them back on without having some super specialized tools and a really, really steady hand.
Yeah.
In fact, that's not the case because I was able to remove the bottom cover, and it appears that they're not soldered in place. There is a slot into which you slide the additional memory, and I took pictures just to make sure and show to the vendor that I'm ordering my memory from, and he confirmed that because
average users aren't intended to open the computer up,
right?
Yeah,
but if you're comfortable with that,
yeah,
then there's no reason you can't do your own upgrades.
Yeah.
The bigger trick is you need the proper anti-static workspace in order to prevent you from zapping the chip. If you can feel the static, it's already too late.
Yeah.
It's really minuscule amounts of static that can damage a chip that you will never feel yourself.
Right.
Oh, I've got my anti-static wrist strap at the ready.
Yep.
Good.
I need the chip, that's all.
Good.
Yep.
Well, good for you, William. Have fun with that. Dig in. Get in up to your elbows and have fun.
All right, guys.
Just be careful, take your time.
Yep. We're seeing.
Yep. All right. Let's know how you make out with it.
We're seeing the same thing.
All right.
Yep. Thank you.
Thanks.
So we're seeing the same thing with the storage drives, too, is some of the new laptops don't use traditional hard drive cases, spinning drives, and even SSD drives. They actually have a M.2 stick that sticks onto the logic board. If there's a socket, they can be replaced. But many of them are now soldering the storage onto the motherboard because, again, that makes it cheaper to manufacture. And, again, you can't replace the internal components, but you can always add an external hard drive on. That does make a laptop a little less convenient.
Right.
But especially an external SSD can be really small.
Yeah. And that's why so many people are very happy with their little Raspberry Pis because you can do dang near – anything with a Raspberry Pi and have lots and lots of fun with it.
Although you can't upgrade the RAM, can you? The RAM is not socketed. But the SD card for internal storage, which is technically external storage.
Yes.
Yeah, no, you can. What is as far as the memory when you order it from Raspberry Pi. So if you buy a 4 gig or an 8 gig unit, that's what it is.
But now they have a lot of hats.
Oh yeah,
and the hats you can do all kind. There's a regular Raspberry Pi, and even on the 400, except it's harder to get to. On a regular Raspberry Pi, there's a 40-pin connector set, the GPIO ports. And there are hats, they call them. They're little boards that fit right on.
Think of them, folks, as expansion boards.
Exactly. And you can do all kinds of things with those.
Yeah, and they'd give you more flexibility. And they're, wow, the number of stuff that's coming on with those hats and capabilities that it's expanding the Raspberry Pi to do, it is really...
You must have 100 hats available to do ham radio stuff. Yeah, I bet.
Well,
but most of them are specialized. Most of those hats are specialized. There are a couple of general purpose ones. I watched a video the other day. There's a hat that lets you plug 5 hard drives into your Raspberry Pi to make a NAS. A network-attached storage device.
Oh, yeah. No, they've got, like you say, yes, there's, if you really are bored and want to, you know, have nothing to do on a day, just search on YouTube projects for Raspberry Pi. You will go blind seeing all the stuff that you could possibly do with a Raspberry Pi. No exaggeration.
Yep. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Ken, you're on the line. I know that. Please stay on the line. We'll get to you when we come back. We're going to take a quick break back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, Ken from Rochester, and you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. You are listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites right here on the Truly Great and Truly Grateful to You as we continue with your generous support to be member-supported, Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites, and all the streams are up.
Yep.
And everything is running. It's just very exciting. And what's most exciting, we have Ken from Rochester, New York on the phone. Hi, Ken. What's up?
Hi, fellas. It's always good to speak with you, and I'm glad you're all sounding as though you're in the peach.
We are.
I am in a groove.
Good.
I was a little disappointed yesterday.
Uh-oh.
Spoke with a friend yesterday, and... stated that they were alerted by their employer that a document the employer had mailed to them came back to the employer with a return to sender label, which included my friend's name with a Bronx, New York apartment address. My friend alerted the United States Postal Service that they did not request a change of address, and the United States Postal Service said, someone requested the change online, and that changing a mail address, home address, I guess, online or any other address was easy to do. They further stated that it would take up to 7 days to correct, and that any mail or package may potentially be delivered to the Bronx, New York apartment address, I guess, during that time. My friend also stated that prior to being alerted, 3 Christmas presents, one of which was an Apple Watch, had yet to be delivered.
Yep.
So I thought maybe everybody could be on the alert for that.
That's a good thought, Ken.
I'm surprised there's no requirement of proof to change your postal address.
Well,
usually you have to go to the post office and hand them your card.
Submit a card.
But you can do it online as well.
Yeah, she didn't do anything online. She was just told verbally by them. And I didn't go out to research it, to look at it at all. So I don't know logically it would make sense, right? You got to put some form of validation, but it sounded like the way she described it, what they told her, It doesn't sound like there's much of anything you have to do. You just go out there and you say, yeah, I'm me and I want to change. And
no, because I always thought you had to, you know, to change of dress, you have to sign a signature card. They've got to have it on file that, you know.
But who do they, what do they compare that signature against? Because you don't sign a card when you get an address.
If you have never registered with the United States Postal Service, anybody can register as you.
Yeah.
Set a password and change your address.
So now they are the owner.
Right.
Wow. Wow.
Scary.
Well, that's that's just one of the places.
Right now, she's very concerned.
She should be.
Yeah.
But everybody should probably go to USPS.com and register so that you are registered as you.
And one of the things it lets you do is see your mail before you get it. So every day I get little pictures of the mail that's coming to my mailbox.
Yep.
And packages that are coming, so you know what's going to be coming, and if it doesn't show up, you have a little better knowledge of submitting a claim.
Yep. That's a good point, Ken. Thank you.
Yeah, I let her know that I was going to keep her anonymous, which...
Yeah, of course you should.
Oh, yeah, no. We have... Quite often, when we pick on people, we usually don't say, you know, whole names.
Right.
We might say a first name or that, but we never say last names or anything else because, hey, you know... The world's not perfect.
Yep.
No, exactly. And I'm going to give her a copy of your podcast after it's set so that she can listen to what you just said. And that should be helpful to her.
Yeah.
One last question before I go, and I'll hang up if you want to answer it. got to swap out an old IDE, 3.5 drive.
Mm-hmm.
And you know the modern ones now are small and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you guys will know what the procedural thing is in order to use the new drive. Do I need an adapter and so on?
Well, that mostly depends on what you're putting it in. Some will require an adapter, and those are cheap online.
Yeah, most new drives you buy today are SATA.
I was going to say, how old is this drive? Because is it IDE or is it SATA?
No, you said it was IDE. Like,
yeah.
So how old is the machine it's going into is the real question as to whether or not there's a SATA connector on it. Is it a desktop or a laptop?
It's a desktop B machine. It's vintage 2000.
If it doesn't have a SATA connector on the board, my suggestion would be to buy a SATA card, which would be faster than an IDE to SATA
cable. Yeah, it can go in that slot.
Then you have to know what kind of slot you have.
Right.
And get the right kind of card.
They're the white slots. I forget what they are.
Yeah, the PCI slots.
Are they single lane, double lane, triple lane?
Oh, yeah. No, you got to.
There's a lot of subspecs on PCI.
Well, you can look your motherboard up. If you take the case off on the side, at the bottom of the motherboard, you'll see a code. You know, the brand and that of the motherboard, you can look it up. And usually within that model, they'll tell you what slots are in there and show you a diagram thereof.
Okay. Well, I will tally-ho and try and do what you just said. And I just want to tell you, it's proud to be a member, and I want you all to have a fabulous Thanksgiving.
Thank you, Ken.
Thanks. Make sure, though, you know, I mean... we preach this all the time, and we've told, matter of fact, we did quite an extensive talk last week about, with the holidays coming up, that people, if not already, have to be even more concerned about their information. It is going rampant right now. After this past year of this pandemic, people are doing a lot of stupid stuff that they maybe before wouldn't have considered. So you've got to be more cautious.
And especially as we're getting close into the holiday shipping season, that it's relatively easy to change a shipping address if you have a tracking number. So you'll often get fake emails saying there's a problem with your shipping. Send us the tracking number and we'll figure it out. The shipping company always knows your tracking number already.
Yeah, they don't need it from you.
Yeah.
Like we've told, you know, folks constantly, if you have to think twice about an email, opening it up, or phone call or anything else, hang up or delete it. If it's really them, they'll call back. 10-to-1 odds. If it's a scammer, no, they're moving on to the next one.
Right. I got an email the other day. There was a horrible problem with one of my Amazon shipments. Click here, blah, 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 blah. Now, I order from Amazon all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not impossible.
Yep.
So I logged on to Amazon. They didn't seem to know about a problem.
Yeah.
Then you look more closely at the email, and all the links don't go to Amazon.
Really?
I was shocked. I was shocked.
I bet you that set you back the whole week.
AMA0N.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
But you got to be very careful. Well, anyway, thanks, Ken. We appreciate that.
All right. I'm sure she'll enjoy what you just stated as well. And again, don't eat too much.
Neither should you. Thanks, Ken.
All right. Bye-bye.
Yeah, we'll all be in that tryptophan coma by Thursday at about 9, 10 p.m. That's but yeah, we've got to be more careful these days. You'll see those scams constantly.
Yeah. Oh, matter of fact, that's one thing I got to admit that what they're calling it now, Matt, is trying to promote. I have seen so many folks on Facebook and that trying to scam the scammers. And there's, matter of fact, there's one lady from Social Security. She's doing this whole webbing thing, and she's doing one after the other of scamming these folks because they're saying they're from Social Security.
Right.
And that's where she works. And she's trying to bust the scammers. And the biggest thing is she's trying to keep them online the longest she can. And if you listen to some of that stuff, maybe it'll make folks aware of the different questions that these idiots ask,
right?
That will make you think. Well, wait a minute. If they're calling that I, you know, owe all this money or that, why would they need this other information if they got your records right in front of you?
They already know. If they're asking a question, they should know the answer to, like what's your tracking number?
Yeah,
you're done. Be done. You don't have to follow them at all anymore. That's ridiculous. You know, when the bank says, send us your account number.
Yep.
What, excuse me? If you can't figure out how to look up my account number in your own bank, then I'm at the wrong bank.
Yep.
But, of course, it's not the bank. It's a completely different guy. It's just some scammer. So be very careful. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Fred from Rochester, New York. Hi, Fred. What's up?
Hi, good afternoon, and grateful member of WGMC. Grateful to have you guys. So happy Thanksgiving for that.
You too.
I have a fairly new Samsung A32 phone. And I've been having, I like to send stuff and see where it's going. I send an experimental one and see where it's going. And trying to send stuff up to the cloud. I have Google Drive. So I'm sending stuff up to the Google Drive various ways, either by the share icon or by send to, or through send it to my own self in an email, multiple ways. And I don't see it going up to the cloud. I see stuff that says download complete, but I can't find it when I go look for it. There is a folder in the backup. My phone is backing up to the Google Drive in the backup folder. And there's, says that it's 7 o'clock this morning. It completed the backup. But stuff that I'm actually sending from an app, various apps, copies of PDFs, copies of Google Docs that I created, not going up to the cloud. I don't know where it's going, but it blinks and it doesn't, and I go back and check it, and I don't see anything in recent. I don't see anything in any of the folders.
Is there an error message of any kind?
Nope, not an error message. But what I'm wondering is if there's a setting that I'm missing on my phone, or
I just had something similar with my boss this morning, and it turned out she wasn't logged into her Google account on the app in the phone, On the other app, she was, but on the app that wasn't working, she wasn't. So we logged in, and then it worked.
Right. So it may be that. It may also be Samsung defaults to a bunch of apps that are not Google.
So it might be going to Samsung's cloud.
That's exactly right. Mm-hmm. You may, in fact, be going to the wrong cloud. It's not to say you aren't going to a cloud.
Where's my shirt today?
I never signed up for the Samsung.
You bought a Samsung phone. You signed up for Samsung.
Yeah, you did.
10-1 odds. It's already hooked up to it. It's one of the default things. That's where they, put in a lot of that bloatware. Whether you want it or not, it's part of it.
Even if I specify Drive, it's got the Google triangle symbol, and I click on that as the where I'm sharing it to. It gives a blank, and then me being me, I go right there immediately to see where is it, and thought, well, maybe it takes some time, so I'll wait a while, and then I.
There might be some other settings that you're missing inside.
Yeah. If you're not logged in to Google Drive, you cannot save to it.
In that specific app.
In that app.
Yep.
But I have to be logged in that app or on the phone?
Both. Depending on, there's 50 ways to do sharing and there's 50 ways to do sending.
Yep.
Some ways you can do it right from... As long as you've signed into your phone with a Gmail account, with a Google account, you're good. Some of them you also have to sign in with the app. And there's several hundred of each. So I can't,
One thing to try is sign out of your account and sign back in.
Right.
Sign out of the Google account?
Yes. Yeah. And sign back in. See if there's an error message. The other thing to do is to sign out of your Samsung account.
Okay.
And then try to save something and see if you get an error message there, which would definitely tell you it's trying to save to Samsung.
Mm-hmm. Oh, gotcha. Okay. Yeah, because I think I briefly looked at the Samsung, clicked on the icon, and there were some setup instructions, and I just backed out of that because I wasn't interested in it, but I wanted to see where it was, if it wasn't on, and it didn't appear to be, but I can check again.
Right. The other thing is, one of the things you can also try is try saving to Google Keep. If you have Google Keep on your phone, try saving something to Keep and see if it actually goes there.
Is that a...
It's a free Google product.
Yeah, it's a free app that you can put on there to save, different notes and all that other stuff.
You can put Keep on your phone. You can put Keep in your browser, on your desktop, so you can get to it from pretty much anywhere on the planet. Whether you use it or not, I'm saying give it a try and see if that works. That'll tell you whether or not you're connected.
I love Keep because I love Keep. I put all my medications, as one little note on there, and it's great. You go into the doctor's office and they go, well, what medicines are you taking? Trying to keep track of them all. Well, I just open up the Keep app, go to that note and say, here you go. I don't remember them all, and I can't pronounce half the names.
Yeah, I hear you on that, yeah.
So I just show them to them, and boom, they're done.
And then you can send it to them.
Is that separate from Google Drive?
Yes. No, well, it saves things in Google Drive, which is why I want you to try it.
Oh, okay.
Right, so you there's a little area in Google Drive that is your Keep data.
Oh, okay.
And and that'll tell you whether or not things are working.
I'll look for that and give that a whirl.
Okie doke.
Good luck.
Again, grateful for having you guys. Keep up the good work.
Thanks. Thank you too. Have fun.
And especially with medicine, where one or two letter difference can mean something radically different. My wife was a medical transcriptionist for 20 years, and learning each new specialty with its own words and its own drugs was so tricky to make sure she got it right.
Yep. All right. While we're waiting, let's talk about we have a question in the YouTube channel, which I almost never look at, but I have looked at it here. Carlos wants to know, will Microsoft change their minds about the TPM requirements for Windows 11?
They already have a couple of times, so probably it'll change again. So one of the big criticisms, in fact, the irony that people are talking about is one of the big changes in Windows 11 is the start taskbar is now in the center of the screen, like the Macintosh dock. And I was listening to This Week in Tech, and they were saying that they expected that to be what all the furor was.
Right.
But no, let's make the TPM change, and everyone is concentrating on that they can't get Windows 11, and now they want it.
Right.
So before they wouldn't have wanted it because the taskbar's in the wrong place. Now they want it because they can't have it. So TPM was a relatively new chip that's
trusted protection model
platform module. Or something like that. Yeah,
trusted platform model module.
It's been around for many years, but it's been turned off in a lot of logic boards. So it may be that if your computer is more than 2 or 3 years old, you don't have this module, and you need version 2.0.
Right.
Even though 1.2 works just fine. And so the current Windows public beta, from what I've read, I keep wanting to try it and haven't gotten around to it yet. The current public beta will run on older computers.
Right.
And Microsoft said in one of the public beta announcement thingies that they are gathering information and their learnings, plural, will help with future system requirements.
Right.
So if you have an older computer and a slower processor that isn't normally supported, then you might want to try it on a separate partition, a separate hard drive, separate computer, so you don't mess up your main machine, and see if it works okay. And maybe Microsoft will then back down on how new a computer you need. The other conspiracy theory is that because so many PCs were purchased last year for the work at home, that there was an expected slump in PC sales this year. And so by shipping new computers with Windows 11, a lot of end users won't upgrade their computer themselves. They'll just buy a new computer with a new OS on it, every 10 years. And so that's a way to boost PC sales, is by having Windows 11 come on the new PCs. But the whole system requirements and the trusted platform module and the hardware checker
right
has been in flux for the 3 or 4 weeks that the public betas have been available. So they probably will.
It is quite like, well, yeah. Here's the thing, of course. Microsoft has done this many, many times before. The fact is that they, there's a lot of run it up the flagpole things that Microsoft does on betas.
Well, and everybody's a beta tester.
Right. And what they determine is whether or not people will go for it. And if enough people will not go for it, they remove the requirement.
Yep.
So, Carlos, the long way around answer is nobody knows.
Yeah.
But it is not impossible that if Microsoft determines they won't be able to push out enough copies with TPM set the way it is, they will remove that requirement.
I'm betting.
They already have posted a way to disable the TPM requirement in your current Windows 11 setup.
Right.
That's where I think technically from this, they're going to wind up doing that. That's just my personal opinion. But I think because of, given the times right now, people just can't go out and get another new machine just because, now all of a sudden Microsoft is saying I got to have this.
Right.
It's easier for the company to do away with that requirement to get more copies of it out.
Right.
And then if a future upgrade, if they want to then require it, it's
the
easier.
The right way to do it is to put it on the programmers.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. When the thing starts to install, one of the questions should be, either you don't have a TPM module and it never asks you this question.
Right.
Or you do have a TPM module and it says, to be more secure, would you like to turn on 2.0?
Yeah. Yep.
Although it does make programs easier to write if you can assume certain things.
Right.
So for every program that's written, is TPM on or is TPM off, becomes multiple added complications in writing that program.
I do understand that, but you know, Microsoft has really never cared about other programmers very much.
Yeah.
No,
only their own.
And on the Apple world, Apple has routinely cut off old computers running new OSs.
Right.
And
Apple has never been afraid to say, gone. You're gone.
Although typically you get 5 or 6 years out of a computer.
It's not like a 3 week. You bought it 3 weeks ago, and it's obsolete. But Apple has never been afraid to say everything you know is wrong. Move on. Buy a new machine.
Well, look at. I mean, there's still a lot of folks out there still running Windows 7 machines.
Yeah. Yes, there are.
I mean, there's still a lot of them out there because, you know, they've got very simple needs. It still works for them, and. You know,
the problem is you can't get support.
I talked to a couple other folks. I mean, they do it within their own shop. You know, and as a matter of fact, this one guy I was talking to, he says, it's not even hooked up to the internet.
Well, and yes, but now how useful is it? If you're running a specific piece of machinery or whatever.
That's what he's
doing. But let us not pretend that anybody in their home, particularly someone who is doing regular work on the internet, should ever run Windows 7 anymore.
No, absolutely not.
Right. Special use cases, okay. We shouldn't talk about them too much because it gives people the idea that it's okay, and it is not. All right, we're going to take a slightly longer break. We've wasted an hour of your life, but don't go away. There's a whole nother hour coming up. Got a couple people, I think, on the line at the moment. Please be patient. We will get to you when we come back. But in the meantime, we're going to take a slightly longer break. But we'll be back with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. You are listening to the longest-running computer show in the entire known universe. That's Soundbites. I know it was a shock to you. I hope you were sitting down. That's Soundbites right here in the Truly Great. And I can't emphasize this enough. They're truly grateful to you that we continue to be member-supported. Jazz 90.1. We will see you in just a couple of minutes.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester. A public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
On Twitter at 901JAZZ.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we are hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest running computer show in the known universe. That would be Sound Bites right here on member supported Jazz 90.1. And we have Dan, who is waiting patiently on the line, I hope. Hi, Dan, what's up?
Hey, how are you guys doing today?
Good, how are you?
Great. I'm just curious as to what your favorite data recovery program is besides SpinWrite.
My favorite data recovery program is offsite backup.
Yeah.
Sorry.
A lot depends on why the data needs recovered. Is it good data on a bad drive or is it bad data on a good drive? And there are different programs that are better than others for both.
Yeah, and it's always my opinion is, you know, if you've got your data backed up, you know, the documents and definitely the photos. Documents can always be recreated. Yeah. Photos cannot. So if you've got those backed up, that's Microsoft's way of just telling you, yeah, do a clean install, reset everything up fresh, and then put the data back into its folders where it belongs.
I've used Data Rescue and Stellar. What's Stellar's name? Data Recovery. Yeah, Stellar. And then for physical recovery services, we often use Drive Savers.
But Drive Savers ain't cheap.
Yeah. No, they're expensive.
Assuming that the drive is functioning okay, but say the data structure is messed up or
That's Spinrite's biggest forte, being able to fix the repair blocks that can't be read properly.
It also depends on here's the other part of the problem. There's programs like Victoria, which is a Windows only program, and it will repair what do they call it? I got it here. Hold on. Minor repairs.
Yeah.
To your drive. Okay.
Like FSCK.
Yeah.
That's probably what it runs, right? What's the Windows one?
Check disk.
Check disk, yeah.
And then there's MHDD. Look, if you go to alternative2.net and type in Spinrite, you'll see a bunch of free alternatives. Most of them are for Windows, obviously. In fact, I think all of them are for Windows. And they're certainly worth a try, but nobody's going to promise.
Yeah, many of the programs will have like a free trial. Well, they'll recover 10 megs to let you see if that worked, and then you buy the program and recover the rest. The one thing I haven't liked is most of the recovery programs have started doing subscriptions.
Right.
So if you want to recover more than one computer, you have to pay the $100 for each computer, or you buy a $500 subscription for all of your computers.
Right.
So they're intended for one person with one computer.
So what is it you're trying to get off of certain files?
Yeah, got a SSD that seems to be missing a few files, but I can see others. I can see most of them. I just can't see the ones that are not there.
So right. That's probably an undelete program rather than a recovery program.
Right. Yeah.
If they have been deleted. Overwritten.
That's the other key thing, overwritten.
You might be able to get them back. The real problem is always people delete something accidentally, then write something new to the drive, which overwrites the now free space, and that program is lost forever. But if you have an undelete program, it should at least tell you whether or not the data you want are recoverable.
And do you have one or two in particular you like?
Most of the recovery programs also have an undelete option.
Right.
Okay. What do you use for Macintosh?
Stellar or Data Rescue. I've played with one called Disk Drill, but I mostly use that for its. It's got more extensive smart recording. The data recovery services you have to pay for.
There's also one called Recuva. R-E-C-U-V-A. R-E-C-U-V-A. Recover. It does a lot of stuff. Hard drives, external drives, USB drives, DVDs, CDs, memory cards.
Yeah. So
it says it'll even undelete files from your iPod.
There's a company called EaseUS. And every search I give for any data recovery stuff, their ad pops up very first.
Oh, always.
Yep.
Always.
And just that point makes me not like them.
Exactly.
They might be a wonderful program,
but they're in my face.
They do make Recovery Wizard.
Yep.
Which is, that's one of those things. EaseUS, E-A-S-E-U-S, has a data recovery wizard. But you can only recover 2 gigabytes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for most people, that's more than enough, but it is a limitation. It runs on both Mac and Windows.
Looks like it's from the CCleaner people.
Yeah. Okay. There are a couple that haven't been updated in like 10 years, but, you know. But I would take a look if they are deleted files, take a look at Recuva. If it's a problem with the hard drive, then the other four I mentioned might be a thing to look at.
Well, thank you very much. I'll give it a spin.
Yep.
And to everyone, please, please, please have a backup drive.
Or two.
Then you don't have to spend so much money on recovery. And for heaven's sake, when you copy something to your backup drive, don't delete it from your main drive, because now it's not backed up again.
Right.
We have so many people will bring in an external drive and say, I can't read the data on the drive. Oh, well, okay, you apparently don't have a backup. Oh, no, this is my backup drive. Well, then just open the file from the main source. Well, no, it's only here. Then it's not a backup.
Right.
A backup copy is a second copy or third or fourth.
Right.
Especially for important stuff.
And if you don't know what to back up or what programs to use to back up, go to asknick.com/backup.php, which is also, I think, the second thing down on our main page.
Yeah, you don't have enough backup.
That's the first thing. The very first thing on our homepage at soundbites.org. A link to that. It's really that simple. You don't have enough backups. And this is a way to get those backups. Some of these programs are free. If you're not using them, that's entirely on you.
And then don't complain, you know, if those, like I say, I can't stress enough, valuable photos are lost forever.
That's right.
Documents, yeah, they can be recreated. You might have to do a little work. But once those photos are gone, folks.
They're gone.
They're just gone.
Just have another kid.
Yeah.
Yeah. Instead of a whole new set of photos.
And then recreate all those special moments that you had. Or, you know, your parents that have maybe no longer with you or other special friends.
So the first kid, there's 1,000 photos. The second kid, there's 100 photos. The third kid, who cares?
That's right. Third kid, maybe you saved their grammar school ID card. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Richard from Irondequoit, New York. What's up, Richard?
Hi. About a half hour ago, Steve Ray mentioned the fact that it was regarding mail delivery, and he gets a photograph of mail he's about to receive the next day.
In the next couple days, right? Yeah. When it goes through the main sorting facility, they take a picture of it and email it to me.
How do you sign up for that?
On the USPS website. It has a name. Let me see if I can find what the name of it is.
Informed
delivery.
Say it again, sir.
Informed delivery.
What, .com or something?
No, on the USPS website.
Informed delivery.
Yep.
Yeah, okay. You look for that and you sign up for it.
That's right on the main page, but I'll post a link to it, too.
I see. Okay, great. I'm going to sign up.
There you go.
Yeah, and suppose
that was an easy one.
So I get pictures of all
the
my
Wells Fargo wagon is a... coming down the trail. Okay.
So I get pictures of all my junk mail before I get my junk mail.
Exactly.
Well, it's only first class. That's the other thing. Yeah. But that's fine.
Well, they were saying, though,
all right, thanks, Richard.
Come the first of the year, though, there are going to be changes to the Postal Service.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Yeah, we'll see.
We'll see. Start getting things on time.
That would be nice.
I'm still looking for... I ordered this one magazine. The last issue that I got... was back in June.
June, very nice. You know, those subscriptions run out eventually.
But I just ordered it in January for a year. Mm. I call them, well, we'll extend you. I said, okay. And that was for a few months. That was a few months ago. Now I got to call them again this week and say, because they said, well, you should start receiving it. And I mean, here, it's almost the end of November, and the magazine usually comes out at the beginning of the month. And I still haven't gotten September's and October's.
Right.
I think it's on one of those cargo ships over.
Maybe. Or they've got the wrong address and they've been, and somebody else is getting all your magazines and going, this is great. Why, you know, I'm not going to give it back to them.
Yeah. We've been getting magazines for a friend of ours that passed away, that's 6-7 years ago now. And, my wife likes it because she likes those magazines and doesn't have to pay for them.
You're right.
She keeps ignoring the renewal notices, and they keep sending the magazine anyway.
As a child, I used to live on Lincoln Avenue in the city, and there was a Lincoln Street in, I want to say, East Rochester.
Yeah.
And we used to get their mail all the time. I mean, all the time. And that's back when there were 2 and 3 mail deliveries a day.
Oh, yeah, I remember. We used to get it twice a day, and was it 7? No, it wasn't 7 days a week, but it was, twice a day.
6 days a week.
Yeah, 6 days a week.
Yep. Okay, our next caller is Joe from Rochester, New York. What's up, Joe?
Hello, guys. A few weeks ago, I called you guys about my Pixel 3. The camera wouldn't do QR codes anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And you told me that this Google had changed it so you had to use Lens.
Yeah.
Well, now my phone, the camera works again.
Oh, there was a, yes, there, okay. Yes. People complained.
Oh, okay.
A lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
a lot of people complained.
It was very awkward to use lens. It was cumbersome.
It was cumbersome.
Yeah.
A lot of people complained, and there have been updates. Those, as far as I understand, are rolling out, so not everybody may have them yet.
Okay.
But theoretically, they are rolling out.
Because you were probably told to restart your phone?
I get that every once in a while.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, I guess that's that. Thanks, guys.
There you go. You win.
Okay, thanks. Bye.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner.
Yep.
Sometimes companies do listen when enough people complain.
Yep. My wife can never remember the term QR code. She calls them tramp stamps.
I have seen people get tattoos of QR codes.
I understand that. Yes, I do. There are places you can get QR codes made for free. And if it's a data sparse QR code, that is to say, it's only a little bit of text or a URL or something like that, the middle section is generally blank, and you can put a picture in that.
Hmm.
And like your logo or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And it does not impinge on the data.
Oh.
So people see that a lot. It depends on whether it's a dense code or a sparse code.
Hopefully the code is correct. It's not like people that get foreign language things written, tattooed on them, and it's conjugated wrong or doesn't mean what they think it means.
Yeah, or it's an insult of some sort. Yeah.
And hopefully, you know.
Oh, God. I just someone had a Rickroll. The QR code on his leg is a Rickroll.
Yeah.
On YouTube. So you scan that and it plays it on YouTube.
We had that at RIT. There was a campaign where I forget what it was for, but it was something, hit the QR code and go see a website about something they were doing. And somebody put out a whole bunch of them that were Rickrolls.
Nice.
They looked, of course, you know, you can't see from the code, but the rest of the picture around it was exactly the RIT piece of paper.
You stick it over the existing paper.
Yep.
They'd have to be pretty precise as a tattoo artist.
Yeah.
If you make the slightest little hiccup or somebody sneezes or moves on you, you could wind up messing up their Q code big time.
Yep. I did a couple of QR codes, tramp stamps, for my wife's coffee business. She had a giveaway for one free cup of coffee. Well, how do you make it one free cup of coffee? So I wrote her some stuff that you scan the QR code, you get your free cup of coffee, and then that you're not good anymore with that QR code. She's not going to work again. It'll come back and say, no, you've already had your free cup. Thank you very much. So we did that for a while. So QR codes are useful.
Mm-hmm.
For a while, they were the new hotness, and then they were the old and busted, and everybody laughed at them. And now they're just one more tool.
Yeah, they're just
in the toolbox.
They're there. If you want to find out more, they tell you just scan this, and you can learn more about this or that.
Yep, that's exactly right. All right.
I read a story about a woman who got I'm free tattooed on her back in Chinese.
Uh-huh.
But it wasn't free as in, you know, not enslaved or not in, it was free as in don't cost any money.
Nice.
I'm free. Hey, come here.
That's very nice. You got to be careful when it's a foreign language you don't speak or read, like, I suppose, in this case.
Like your story the other day, the American Sign Language for where's the bathroom?
Oh, yeah.
It's very different in British Sign Language.
Yes, it is very different, or at least it was back in the 70s. All right, here's a news item. You can give us a call, by the way, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 1-800-790-0415. I will read a news item. Chrome users, beware. Attacks on Google's browser are increasing rapidly, and now multiple new hacks have been confirmed. Google published the news in a new blog post where it revealed an eye-popping 25 new vulnerabilities have been discovered in the last 2 weeks. It rates 7 of those as high-level threats. Linux, Mac OS, and Windows users are all affected and need to take immediate action. Chrome has run into further trouble after numerous reports from users that the new version, 96, breaks access to major sites like Instagram, Twitter, Discord, and more. Users receive the message, something went wrong, try reloading. When pages reload, they're often missing key elements like images, embedded videos, and pages even render in the wrong color. Disabling the new embedding feature will fix the issue for most users. As is standard practice, Google is currently restricting information about these hacks to buy time for Chrome users to upgrade. These hacks all follow a familiar pattern, with use after free exploits more than making up the majority of attacks. Chrome V8 exploits have been rife in 2021, along with heap overflow flaws. V8 is an open source JavaScript engine, which is used by Google Chrome and Chromium based web browsers like Microsoft Edge, Opera, Amazon Silk, Brave, Yandex, Vivaldi. In response to these new threats, Google has released a major new upgrade for Chrome, version 96.0.4664.45. Be warned, Google states that this will roll out over the coming days or weeks, which means you may not be able to protect yourself immediately. To check if you're protected, navigate to Settings, Help About Google Chrome. If you're settings in the browser, the little three dots in the upper right corner. If your Chrome browser is listed as 96.0.4664.45 or higher, you are safe. If the update is not yet available for your browser, make sure you check regularly for the new version. Remember, after updating, you must restart your browser to be protected. This step is often overlooked. It is to Google's credit that fixes for high-level attacks are consistently released within days of their discovery, but they are only effective if billions of users subsequently restart their browsers. Also, if you update Chrome, that does not update Vivaldi or Yandex or Brave or Amazon Silk or Opera or Microsoft Edge. Those will also all need their own updates to fix this latest set of problems. So make sure the very next thing you do is check your browser version right now. Check to see if you're up to date. Every browser gives you an update button in Google Chrome. It's about Google Chrome, and you can check to see if you need an update. So do it.
I'm updating mine right now.
Yeah, very good. Are you up to date? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. Just like what?
No, I was going to say, mine have been doing it just up in the upper right-hand corner. You'll see if you're running Chrome, you start it up. All of a sudden, if you notice in the upper right-hand corner, it'll say update. Click on it, folks. It's safe. You can do that.
Right. And we're going to go to the phones. Our next caller is Jerry from Rochester, New York. What's up, Jerry?
Hello, guys. Hey, I heard the section earlier today about laptops becoming more and more one piece with no user serviceable parts inside. And one of the things that kind of surprises me is that you, as IT professionals, haven't been advocating using an external storage device for all the user data. You can get something like a 32 or a 64 gigabyte USB flash drive. That's about the size of your thumbnail. You plug it into a USB port, and then the only setup that you have to do is to direct all your applications to store the local data on that drive instead of the internal drive.
Well, we've been recommending cloud service. Because
he's talking about primary storage. We're talking about backup storage for external drives.
Right. You're right, though, Jerry. You can. I have a 512 gig thumb drive that is about the size of my thumbnail. I'm using it on my Pi 400 right now. But I have it, and it works great. I mean, absolutely great. The problem with something like that is you now have something sticking out of your laptop.
And if you bump it,
have a problem with that.
You bump it or quick grab the laptop to go, that can get bumped. And it doesn't take much for that little USB drive to get the circuit board on the end of it to get disconnected. And then all of a sudden, oops, you can't get at that data.
You can't get at that data, and you may have ruined the internal connection. The other thing, Jerry, is that is not a backup. If you use it as primary storage, you still don't have a backup, which is what we're talking about. Backups are more important. Sorry, go ahead.
I understand that point, but to the other comment, you can get a 64 gigabyte flash drive that literally is the size of your thumbnail, and it sticks out less than a quarter of an inch from the USB port.
Right.
And the suggestion is use that as your primary user data storage.
But that is not a backup, which is what we're talking about. You're right. You can use that as a primary storage, and that's fine, rather than your internal hard drive, and that's fine. But because it is, I'm sure you know this, USB drives degrade. Every time you write to them, they degrade. So whether it's internal or external, an SSD is a flash drive. And every time you write to it, you degrade it. If that is your only storage, you are not backed up, and you will at some point lose those data. So making it your primary is fine, but if it is your only, it's no better than using your internal.
Mm-hmm.
And the other problem is that USB is significantly slower than the internal interfaces.
Right.
Which is usually fine for documents, but if you're doing videos or photo editing, that may be too slow. Yeah. But yes, so when you fill up your internal drive, it used to be you get a bigger internal drive, but a lot of computers can't do that anymore, so then you decide on an external drive.
Right.
Okay, that's cool. But that kind of gets to my second question. The very small form factor external USB drives, and I think you know the ones I mean. They look like the size of a Bluetooth dongle or something.
Yeah.
I have a couple of those, and I use them on a regular basis for storage. But if you use them a lot, they seem to get warm.
Yep.
Sure.
Is there a thermal issue with the very small form factor USBs that we need to every so often think about?
It's forcing a charge through an insulator into a cell, and that generates heat.
And if you have a big one, then there's a lot of area to dissipate that heat.
In a very small space.
And the smaller they get, you have less area to dissipate heat. That's just physics.
Yeah.
So absolutely, if you use it as your primary storage, it's going to get awful warm. And will it run over the thermal limit that starts to degrade it even worse and break something? Yeah. Who knows?
And there's also a big difference between the really cheap thumb drives and really good thumb drives.
Yeah, right.
And like I say, it doesn't matter whether you're using internal storage or external storage. The key thing is, it doesn't matter where it is. The key thing is how many times you got it backed up.
Yeah. Right.
Yep. And the thought would be that if you have an external device as your primary storage, you just copy it to another external device and proof you're backed up. All right, guys, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
All right, thanks. So we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. You are listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will be back in just a couple of minutes. Don't go too far.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Buck from Penfield, New York, on the line. What's up?
Hi, gentlemen. I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
I've been fighting with something on Windows 10 ever since it's been on my machine, and I don't know if you guys have covered it before or not. It has to do with displaying network computers on the file browser, on the file window.
That has always been a problem.
Yes. I've been all over the Internet. I've done all the system switches on and off, switched to manual to automatic, and nothing works.
The one thing that works pretty much all the time is to get a domain server that manages all those network names for you.
So I've got to go to a third-party product.
No, you buy Windows 10, 10 server.
Oh, okay. So, all right. same deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the problem often is the network name.
Yeah.
Because it used to be, I think, Workgroup. Yep. And now it's something else.
MS Home.
Home.
Or something like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
If you have a small enough network, you can make a host file on everybody's computer. So
right.
Bill is 192.168.1.1, and Steve is 192.168.1.2.
Right. The other,
you've got to manually set something up.
Right. The other part of the problem is if you have Windows 10 Home.
Yeah.
Because there are several versions of Windows 10.
Yep.
And the low-end version, Windows 10 Home, doesn't let you change that.
Okay.
And so if all your other devices are on Workgroup, which, for example, if you bought a network-attached storage device, or if you bought a router that had a hard drive in it, it would probably be on Workgroup.
Okay.
And if your new machine, your Windows 10 machine, is on Home, it's going to say, I'm sorry, that's a different network. I'm not allowed to talk to it.
And you also have to have your network connection set to private.
Yep.
And you have to have your network discovery turned on.
Yep.
And there's all the on each machine individually. So it's very tricky.
I mean, it's beginning to sound like there ain't no easy way out, and who knows if Windows 11 is going to solve the problem anyhow.
It's not going to solve the problem. Absolutely not.
Basically, Windows 11 is basically Windows 10 with a new skin on the front.
Yeah, that's really all it is.
Okay.
And just, all of it is just NT under the hood.
And a way to make more money.
Yep. Yeah.
Are we dead in the water with this showing up? I can type the path name //.
Yep.
Whatever the
name
is, click on that, and bingo, the drives pop up.
And then make that a shortcut so you don't have to type that whole name again.
Right.
Yeah, but that's a workaround. We shouldn't be having to do workarounds.
No, that isn't the workaround. The real way to connect to a server is to type the entire path name.
Yeah. But yeah, you can. One of the things we used to do for our users at RIT was everybody had a startup file.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That net mapped use. All those net use, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And we put all of those in there, and then they would just show up as drive letters.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Well, I'm trying to just be a user and not become a network manager.
Yeah, too bad.
Yeah.
You lose.
Yeah, that's you. It doesn't matter what you want. That's what Microsoft wants you to be. You need to be a systems administrator.
Okay, thank you very much.
Sorry.
And that was always one of the complaints on the Mac, is that the auto discovery of network services made AppleTalk so chatty that Windows administrators hated it.
Hated it.
But it let Mac users find printers and file servers on the network really easy.
The problem
because every
is
device
found
said, hi, here I am,
them.
Hi, here I am.
But it found all of them.
Yeah.
So if you were at somewhere like RIT, you had a list of 60,000.
The network
printers.
Managers had to set up zones better.
Right.
Yep. I remember doing that at Kodak when I went to the chooser to select a printer. I found one in Taiwan. Hey, I could print there.
Yes, you could.
Which would be nice if I was going to a meeting in Taiwan tomorrow. I could send my print ahead of me.
The other problem was, at one point at least, Apple defaulted to the first printer on the list.
Yeah. Alphabetically.
So we had a guy who set up his printer as A because he didn't want to have to scroll down through a list.
Yep.
He came in one morning and it was one of those, a dollar a page die sub printers. He came into a ream of paper had been printed.
Yep.
Much of it pornography. All on his printer. And he calls me up because it's somehow my fault. And I told him, this is exactly what I told you was going to happen. Don't even pretend to blame me. I told you this was going to happen.
First printer on the list.
Because everyone assumes the first printer on the list is the one they're sitting next to.
Exactly right. And that's why I named my printer Wastebasket. First, nobody's going to print to the wastebasket. Secondly, it's W.
Yeah.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Jim from Irondequoit, New York. Hiya, Jim. What's up?
Well, I hate to ask this question because I haven't been paying any attention, but can you give me an update on Windows 11? I mean, is this something that's automatically put on my machine or what? I have no idea what Windows 11 is all about, if I have to buy it or if it's upgraded
You may start seeing ads. You may start seeing ads for it on your computer, but currently you have to manually go out and get it, and it is currently free. But it does require certain recent hardware. So if your computer is more than 2 or 3 years old, it may not work anyway. There is a hardware compatibility checker that you can download and install to see if your machine can take Windows 11. But a lot of people don't like it because it looks so different, and that's that's, I guess, Microsoft's point.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Underneath the hood, it is Windows 10. They're all the same. The big difference is a couple of little routines under the hood, and the user interface looks different. That's the big
window dressing.
Window. I mean, everything I do now works perfectly, and I'm just wondering if I'm missing out. Apparently, from what you said, I'm not missing out anything.
No,
absolutely not.
Yes, you are. You're missing out on all the frustration of getting used to a new operating system just because Windows wants to move things around, relabel them, and make your life a hell.
Okay, thank you very much.
That's right. Windows is not for the weak.
Yeah.
If what you want is ease of use and the ability to do anything anytime, then you get a Mac or you get Linux.
And if
Windows is for people who want to struggle.
And if you want to ruin your holidays, go ahead and do the update. Just don't call us.
Yeah, right.
Okay, no. Okay, thank you very much. Very helpful.
Thanks.
He has been forewarned.
That's right. We joke, of course. We don't need your calls about how Windows is so easy to use. We get it. It was a joke.
Yeah.
Try to get a sense of humor. Lighten up.
Yeah.
But yeah, the reality is that 99% of Windows 11 is Windows 10.
Mm-hmm.
You're only missing out on a couple of internal things that are not really missing out on. And
how much can they change in it? Not really that much. I mean,
they've changed it enough that manufacturers, software writers, have to write new code for their application. So you're going to have to upgrade a bunch of stuff.
So Microsoft can make more money.
Well, yeah. So
because you got to have the blessing of Microsoft to be working on their machine.
Don't forget, all of this is heading toward Windows 365.
Yep.
Windows as a service.
Windows as a service up in the cloud.
Yes.
So right. So as they progress through the versions of Windows, they're making them more and more compatible with what they'll have in Windows 365, assuming that's the name they keep. So be aware that those changes, any changes you get in Windows now, are mainly to prepare you for Windows as a service, where you will never have a free version. You will pay every year for the privilege of running Windows in the cloud.
That's why it's better just to use a Google Chromebook.
Use a Chromebook or whatever.
And the other thing, too, is minimum specifications they've published for a 1 gigahertz computer, dual core or better, and 4 gigs of RAM are almost ludicrous, even now for Windows 10.
Right.
A quad core with 8 gigs minimum. And even more is better.
Remember, those minimum requirements means you can run Windows. Not any programs with Windows. But you can run Windows, and you will measure response time with a calendar, but you will be able to work.
See, that's why I'm still saying that even with Windows 10, you're going to see folks say, okay, break that 10 computer off the internet. I've got a Chromebook that does all my internet stuff. I turn maybe
again, do not stop. Please stop. Please don't tell people to keep running old systems, even if they're off the internet, because they don't hear that second part. They don't hear off the internet. They don't hear it.
I said Windows 10. Don't correct me.
Yeah, even so,
I said Windows.
It.
I said what they're doing. If you listen to me, what I said is what they're going to drive people to do is stick with Windows 10 because they don't want to go up to a paid service up there, that they're going to force them to go to some other system, whether it's Unix, whether it's a Chromebook, whether it's go to a Mac,
right.
Because folks don't want to do that. They still want some control.
Windows 10 will become unsecure.
Yep.
Because they're simply going to stop updating.
I'm not saying.
Right now, the support goes to 2025, which sounds like a long way away, but it isn't.
It's not. No.
But they may extend that then, but we don't know yet.
We don't know yet, and it is unlikely. If Windows 365 is becoming successful, they will not extend Windows 10 support.
And see, that's the scary. That's what I'm hearing from a lot of folks. They do not like the idea of Windows 365 up in a cloud where they have no control. I'm hearing a lot of that.
Yep.
From a lot of my old customers and everything else.
Yep.
And that's why I'm telling them, then fine, stick with a Chromebook. If you've got to go on the internet, do correspondence and everything else, a Chromebook will do that from now until the cows come home.
Right.
You don't have to worry about the spyware. You don't have to worry about Windows updates and everything else. You can still talk to your customers and everything else.
If you're a programmer and you're writing Windows 10 code, you need a Windows machine. Or Windows anything code, you need a Windows machine. If you're writing a program that runs on Windows, you need a Windows machine. If you are working for a company that has a Windows-only program that you must use, then you need a Windows machine. Everybody else, not so much.
And this is where even we've been talking about, even with a Chromebook, and you and I have talked about it countless times, I can create something in Chrome Docs or a spreadsheet, and I can hand it over to any other corporation, and they don't have to know what the heck I created it in.
That's right.
Because it doesn't mean beans, but it doesn't tie me to Microsoft.
Right.
Because I'm doing it on my Chromebook, and I'm doing it in Google Docs. And I'm free of that. And, you know, I don't have to worry about the spyware, the malware, all that.
Right. I work with a couple of companies, and one of them, we have a Google Workspace.
Mm-hmm.
And all I have to do is write stuff in the Google Web Workspace, automatically shared to everybody. We got one guy, God forbid he doesn't download it in Microsoft Word, but you can do that.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
We got another guy who prefers to print everything out, and he downloads it as a PDF, and you can do that. But everybody else collaborates online, and we all just get into the document, and we write, and we do stuff, and we add things, and we keep our agenda that way. So, you know, you go to the meeting in the morning, and you open up the document, and there's, you know, 15 people have added things to the agenda. And you can just go right down the line and do whatever you want to do.
Same with me. I've been able to create stuff, you know, with this group that I belong to and, you know, diverse folks. But again, because we're all, you know, I'm putting it up there. They don't know that, oh, I created that slide in Google.
Right.
They just sit there and say, oh, yeah, okay. And they add it to the presentation. They're able to get it up and going.
Right. Can you send me those slides? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. File, download as PowerPoint. There you go.
Yep.
And everybody can read PowerPoint. I can send you a PowerPoint slide on your Mac, even if you don't have PowerPoint. Yep.
Google Slides will read it. Apple Slides. Apple Keynote will read it.
Apple Keynote, that's
Open,
it.
Open Office will read it.
Fred from Rochester.
Yeah.
I just heard someone saying that companies are trying to team up to form a competitor to Microsoft Office. And I said, well, there's already Google Docs and Open Office and LibreOffice, and there's a lot of competitors to Microsoft Office. What are you thinking of?
Right. But you're right. They're all out there. And all of the things he mentioned are free.
Yep.
The only one these days that you need to pay for, if you're going to pay, is Microsoft Office.
Yeah. And again, the email and everything else.
Right. I know many, 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 many companies who used to run all their own email servers. Now they just let Google do it.
Yep.
I'm hearing that.
I had someone call me the other day about that. You know, what does it take to run your own email server? Oh, Lord, you don't want to do that.
You do not want to do that
And
anymore.
Most companies, that actually saves them so much money by not having to do it.
Right.
Because they're not maintaining a server. They don't have to have an employee straightening out the mess. They just sign them up for...
You don't have to have multiple backups. You don't have to do anything. Just
it's there.
Google.
Yeah. Sign them up. Boop.
All of my domains are actually Google. I use Google Mail. Mm-hmm. My wife's domain uses Google Mail. It still ends in thebeanqueen.com, but it's and Google Mail.
We started early enough that we have 100 free accounts.
Oh, baby.
And then it was 10 free accounts, and now it's no free accounts.
Right.
But that's the whole cool thing, though, is, again, they found out that, you know, if a machine does go south on you, boom, all you do is get that new Chromebook or whatever book it is, sign in your Google account. Everything's there.
You're done.
Your bookmarks, all your contacts, all your photos, all your documents. It's there. You didn't have to worry about, oh, I had just had a hard drive crash and there goes all my stuff. Nope.
Nope. It's all up there.
And that used to be a nightmare back in the day, saving all the bookmarks and everything else for folks because they never backed it up.
Right. And knowing where they were and they're in different places on every machine and everything else is ridiculous.
It was a nightmare.
Back to the phones. Our next caller is Fred from Rochester, New York. What's up, Fred?
Hey there again. Got another question. Still working on the same problem, but a little bit different. I've uploaded some PDFs to the cloud from my phone, and I go and I look, and the PDF is there, but it can't be read.
What error message do you get?
Just said no application.
Right. Yeah. The thing is there, you just don't have a program in the cloud that will read that PDF.
What browser are you using?
Chrome.
Chrome should read PDFs directly.
Yeah, it should.
Unless it's turned off as a security thing, because PDFs are known
to have
problems. Yeah.
Well, I've got a couple that I've saved that I don't know if I kept them or deleted them because I couldn't read them.
Yeah, there is a setting to disable the internal PDF viewer.
Right.
Settings, advanced, privacy and security, site settings. Ooh, that's way down there. I will post this.
Yeah. And if that's turned off, you will never be able to read PDFs. But once you turn it...
Some I can read and some I can't.
Right. Depends on... Well, that... Okay. So are they all in Google Docs?
Yes.
Then you either had a bad upload or the document itself is damaged. Can you read that document on your machine?
I'm working from my phone and it's still saved on the phone.
That's not what I asked. What I asked is, can you read it on the phone?
I can read it on the phone.
All right.
And then I want to save it up to the cloud because
sure.
At the minute I lose the phone or it gets broken.
Right.
Then I go and double check it to make sure, you know, like you had said before about saving stuff, make sure it's there and it works.
Sure.
Some of them do and some of them don't.
What I might suggest you do is wait until you're at a desktop somewhere, a laptop,
okay,
to check those files. They may be openable on your desktop, but not on your phone.
Depending on old.
But the other thing is to check to see if a particular site has PDFs are blocked. And Steve's going to post that link.
Okay. Yeah, because I'm creating it on my phone, I'm uploading it from my phone, and I'm reading it on my phone, and I go to Drive and try to open it there.
Yeah.
Some of them have worked, and some of them have come up with a... And I'm trying to find
like
one.
I said, it could be a bad upload.
Or the upload hasn't finished yet.
Or the upload hasn't finished
especially
yet.
Especially from a phone. It may be
right.
Slower internet.
Right. So, it, you know, you. It, I take it we solved your first problem earlier.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, so you have a Samsung A32 phone. That's not the fastest phone in the market.
Okay.
So it may be that they aren't done uploading. PDFs are awfully big, so that's possible. I'd say give it a little time, and then at some point try it on a desktop and see if you can read them.
You had mentioned bad upload. Now that's a glitch with the internet provider.
Yes. Okay. You know, it depends on how you know, if you're in a place where your signal is not great, or there's a disruption by the whoever, whether you're doing it through your cellular connection or through Wi-Fi connection, that happens sometimes. And again, it may just be slow. If you've got a bad connection, it'll keep trying, but, you know, it can take 10 minutes, 15 minutes to upload a large file if there are interruptions.
Yeah, I have PDFs that loaded and readable after that one.
Doesn't matter.
Try deleting it from Google and then uploading it again.
Yeah, try deleting that one, the ones you can't read, and upload them again.
Yeah, I'll do that. All right, still working at it, still learning it.
Okay, good for you, Fred.
Goodbye to Microsoft.
There you go.
And thanks again for all your help.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, one thing we have to remember is that network connections are sometimes wonky.
The fact that it works at all is amazing.
It is a miracle.
And it was designed 50 years ago.
Yes. Yes.
Bob Metcalf, right?
Yep.
Ethernet packets?
He was one of the guys, him, Vince Cerf, a couple of other guys. And they created this thing that they thought, well, this will work for now. And for now is 50 years.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the father of the internet. So
Bob Kahn. Bob Metcalf was Ethernet, which became 3M.
Right.
Yeah, Bob Kahn and Vint Cerf were TCP/IP.
Yep. And the dirty little secret, of course, is that Ethernet is just TCP/IP over. It's Ethernet is actually Wi-Fi.
Over Ethernet?
Only the carrier, instead of being a wave in, like it is in Wi-Fi, is the wire inside the Ethernet port. But other than that, the protocols are identical.
I thought it was the other way around. Ethernet was first, and then they made a wireless version of it.
But no, he made it point is, he made it a radio. And so it went over, the carrier was a wire, not a wave, right? Carrier wave.
Mm-hmm.
It was a wire, but that meant when they added Wi-Fi, it was done, essentially.
Because it already is.
All they had to do was change what the carrier was.
Okay.
Instead of a wire, it was a wave. They were done.
I used to work at a translation company, and trying to translate Wi-Fi was very hard because in a lot of languages, it translates into wireless wire.
Yeah.
So it's Ethernet over radio waves. It's a wireless wire.
Right. That's why nowadays the most languages understand the term Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
Directly. So you'll hear them speaking a foreign language and then Wi-Fi.
Right.
And then,
which was, the name was picked for wireless fidelity.
Right.
Because it went back to high fidelity records.
Right. It was a play on hi-fi.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a new, matter of fact, that's a big ad for the new Pixel 6.
Yeah.
Is to be able to do translation.
Yes.
You can sit there and hit a button. And
live, real-time translation. Yeah.
Think about that.
There are some issues with the 6. There are a lot of bugs at the moment. I have the 5A. I'm not liking it. I'm loving it. It's great. It's great. And I have translation in it. I don't know if it's the same as the one in the 6.
Right. I mean, they've added, I still keep getting the updates. I just got an update again for mine.
I got an update.
And
this
I've got
morning,
the 3A.
Yeah. Don't forget, everybody, tomorrow night at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, we will be in the Soundbites Lounge, soundbites.org/lounge. We'll get you there. Now that we've gotten rid of the www part, it should work right. So we're doing that. But yeah, I have found with my new phone that my major frustration is I keep having to reconnect things that were previously connected on my old phone. So I couldn't run my Wi-Fi analyzer. I forgot when I first set it up the last time, I had to say allow location.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm still finding that like 2 weeks after I got my new computer.
Well, it's exactly. Like we've said before, even when you lose a credit card, trying to remember all the things that you had to do auto pay.
Yep.
No different with then on the phone, setting up all the different apps. Once you set it up, boom. It's just like when I go to the drugstore and they ask me, what's my wife's phone number? I don't know. It's in my phone.
Exactly
I got to look it up.
Exactly right.
I don't remember it.
Right.
I sometimes get in trouble because my boss is hotkey 1 and my wife is hotkey 2.
Oh, yeah. Be very careful. Maybe you ought to make hotkey 3. You know, put something in between them. All right. That music tells us that we are done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright and Steve Ray. I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to thank me, Nick Francesco, for just being so wonderful.
And humble.
And humble. That's God bless me. I'm so humble. We want to thank...
Choked him up.
Choked him up. Please vote in the poll, everybody. That's at soundbites.org. I'd love to see some fairly high numbers in that poll, please. And we're done for another week. You can join us tomorrow night in the lounge, soundbites.org/lounge. If you're subscribed to AskNick.com, we do the same thing on Wednesday nights. But we're done for another week. You've been listening to Soundbites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you in just 166 hours.